I'm Sue Bolin with Probe Ministries and Living Hope Ministries. And this is the session on emotional dependency, which describes the essential aspect of most lesbian relationships, but is not at all limited to lesbians by any stretch. Many, many guys struggle with emotional dependency. There are a lot of guys and girls, particularly in the high school and college area, that struggle with this as well. And so we're talking about relational idolatry and people meaning more to each other than they should. You see the background that I'm using here. This is a broken levee in New Orleans after Katrina. And what you can see is on one side of the picture is an intact neighborhood where you see green grass and driveways and landscaped lawns. And on the other side of the canal where the levee has broken, the water has gone into the neighborhood. It's flooded. It's caused mass destruction. The houses can't be lived in. It's poisoned everything. It's caused all kinds of emotion of physical destruction and disruption. And that is a picture of what happens with emotional dependency when our feelings and our friendship and our love gets unhealthy, and it breaks the levee from healthy to unhealthy. And it just kind of consumes and destroys and moves into every area of life, and you don't any longer have the love and the friendship under the control that it needs to have. I'm drawing my comments today mainly from Lori Rentzel's classic little book, Emotional Dependency, which InterVarsity Press sells for like $1.50. It's a classic, and it doesn't take long to read, but it nails so many of the aspects of emotional dependency. I highly recommend it. Lori defines emotional dependency as when the ongoing presence and or the nurturing of another person is believed necessary for personal security. In other words, I can't be okay unless you're there for me. And basically what you're doing is you're putting all of your eggs in somebody else's basket. I am totally dependent on you to make sure that I am okay. It's when one or both people are looking to a person to meet their basic needs for love and security rather than to God. This is what makes it relational idolatry. And that's why as Ricky was talking about in the first session in the 1 Corinthians passage about idolaters, we are all idolaters of something or another every single day of our lives when we look to anything other than the Lord Jesus to meet our needs. I particularly appreciate the phrase desperate neediness. That's what sums up emotional dependency. I desperately need you. There's this need to suck life and purpose and direction and fulfillment out of another person. It's a warping of the true feminine. God makes women to respond and nurture and support. The true masculine is to protect, to lead, protect, and provide. And because we really see this in women more than men, we can really understand emotional dependency in a lesbian context super easily. But this feminine creative design to respond and nurture and support gets twisted and warped to the point where you just want to bind yourself up with the other person to nurture them and derive your nurturing and respond to them and get them to respond to you and support them and make sure that they're constantly supporting you. And it's like super gluing two souls together. Ricky Shalette has a great phrase for this. He calls it being giant sucking funnels. And you just... I'm the cruise queen, and I absolutely love cruise ships, and I'm always intrigued by the smokestack, you know, the big funnels on the tops of the machines. And when I see the funnels on the top, I always think about what emotional dependency is like, which is instead of belching smoke out the top, they're sucking it in and just kind of connecting with a person and going, I'm going to draw my everything from you. And that's what it feels like. And if somebody is emotionally dependent on you and they're trying to suck their life out of you, it's a very frustrating and scary and frightening and very difficult place to be. Here is a great, this is to me the anthem of emotional dependency, is in Barry Manilow's song, Can't Smile Without You. Sounds so romantic until you think of it in terms of emotional dependency. Sorry, I don't hear speakers. You know I can't smile without you. I can't smile. I cannot do this. I'm an alto. I feel glad when you're glad. If you only knew what I'm going through. I just can't smile without you. It's just so sad. You can hear this and think, how romantic is that? I mean, I am not happy without you. If I can't laugh and I can't sing and I'm finding it hard to do anything unless you are okay with me, I am attached to you and you own my life and you control me. That is not healthy. That is not a healthy relationship. So after being years of... I'm sorry, I am a Barry Manilow fan. I'm sorry, it's probably genetic or something. But I was listening to the song for years and then realizing after I started studying emotional dependency... My gosh, this song is sick! There you go. Let me give you some characteristics of emotional dependency. First of all, we need to put it in its proper spiritual context. People are emotionally dependent because we were all bent at the fall. And let me give you an illustration. This is from Janelle Holman, who is an awesome counselor in the Denver area. She's been helping lesbian women for years. And she points out that in the beginning, when God created Adam and Eve, they were perfect, they were upright, and they had a relationship with God where they were standing upright and they would extend their hands and worship to Him, and they went to Him first. And they had this wonderful intimacy and closeness with God, and He was their everything. And then sin entered the world, the fall bent them, and they are no longer upright, now they're bent. And when they were reaching out to God in the beginning, if you're bent at the waist and you're reaching out, now you're going after the creation rather than the creator, which is what Romans 1 says. And it's appropriate to say, you are my everything and I need you for everything. But now if you're bent, you go, I need you. I desperately need you. That desperate neediness is appropriate toward God, but it's very inappropriate and it's very unhealthy if it's toward another person. Very intriguingly, she said, if we get more and more into our sin and into our depravity, instead of just reaching out at the creation, we can go even down even further, and then you get to the really, really depraved stuff. Like, that's where bestiality comes in. You know, just not even going after other people, but going after other kinds. And the great thing about what Jesus Christ does, when we put our trust in Him and we are reborn and we are regenerated and He makes us righteous in His sight and says He makes us upright again, He makes us like this. Inside, the true us, the new us, instead of being just bent at the fall, our flesh is always going to be bent. That's why it has to be crucified. But our true insides are upright and we can have this relationship with God again. But the bentness explains emotional dependency. That's where that comes from. There's jealousy and possessiveness and a desire for exclusiveness. All other people are a threat. There is this, oh my gosh, BFF, you know, we are best friends forever. And you are my soulmate, and I'm so into having you be my number one, and I am your number one. And we just need each other, and there's nobody else. And that sounds just so wonderful in the beginning, and then you realize you can't live life healthily that way. There's a desire to spend time alone with the other, and people get frustrated when that doesn't happen because it's a one-on-one sort of thing. And there is a honeymoon stage that relationships go through. I want you and only you, and I want you to want me and only me, and I don't want there to be room for anybody else in the whole world except you and me. If the other person withdraws slightly, there can be irrational anger or depression. What do you mean? You're not going to answer my phone calls. I know someone who was in such an emotionally dependent relationship that they texted another person 47 times in one day. Does that sound excessive to you? That is desperate for the other person to reassure them, everything's okay with us, everything's okay. And when you don't answer my phone calls and you don't answer my texts, what are you doing to me? I can't even think of anything else until you reassure me that we are okay. That's irrational. There can be romantic or sexual feelings that leading to fantasy about the other, especially as Ricky was talking about, if you get those hormones mixed in with attractions to others, you can experience romantic and erotic feelings that really ought not to be there. And with emotionally dependent relationships, I'm especially here talking about people that shouldn't be in, this is not marriage relationships, but having fantasies about the other, cravings and yearnings. I have the privilege of moderating the online forum for women on our Living Hope website. And we've got about 4,000 people who've registered from around the world who get online support, free, anonymous, very confidential. As a matter of fact, we don't have anybody have contact with each other outside the forums to keep them from stumbling. And as new women come in and they're getting over a relationship, because that's usually when we get them, is I'm dying here. I don't know what to do next. And those who are trying to disentangle themselves from an emotionally dependent relationship, trying to leave their lover or separate households or whatever, even those who have recently fallen emotionally with the choir director at their church or whatever. And they find, I'm constantly yearning and craving this person's time and attention. I want to be with them. I'm constantly thinking about them. And then I start thinking about, what would it be like to just go away for the weekend, just the two of us in a hotel room and just being able to talk and talk and talk and anything else that happens. And these fantasies that come up. That's all part of emotional dependency. Before I go any further with describing what ED is like and where it comes from, it's the other ED. Cialis will not fix this one. I want to share with you the transcript of a section of a Janelle Holman lecture that will set the paradigm for you for the understanding of the feelings that go along with emotional dependency. This is actually about two women in lesbian relationships and what the emotional dependency looks like there. That's not the important thing. What I want you to hear is the feelings that go, the sense of desperate neediness. This will put in context everything else that I'm going to say. Emotional dependency is when a woman posits her identity and well-being in another woman. So she says unconsciously, my well-being depends on my connection with you. If our connection or relationship is constant, warm, secure, and loving, I feel okay. If the connection is threatened in any way, I am in crisis. I am not okay. I want you to hear these words at a different level. Consider a little baby. A little baby can say these words. If my connection is with you, Mom, is threatened in any way, I'm in crisis. If I'm separated from you, I may even die. That's what's coming out in these relationships, an incredible need to feel this warm attachment and connection. Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate that. I don't call everybody sweetheart. This is my son. It's not about sex for the women. The women just want to be held. They want to rest in another woman's arms. They want to suckle at a breast. They want to gaze into the eyes of a woman like a baby would her mother. Do you remember what Ricky was saying about how girls, you know, need to connect with mom and get that warm, nurturing, loving thing? So many of the women that we minister to, they miss that. And even if mom was gazing into their eyes and loving them and nurturing them, the perception was off. It's kind of like having a broken radio antenna, and the radio waves are being pumped into the air, but they're not receiving it. So that's what we hear over and over again is, you know, I want another woman to nurse me and love me and cuddle me like a mommy would. So they want to gaze into the eyes of a woman like a baby would her mother. Now, naturally, these kinds of behaviors become sexual for adult women, but it's not about sex. And most of my clients say, I don't care about the sex. I just want to be held, and I don't want to be alone. By the way, we hear that from the men a lot as well. I will go out looking for sex, not for the sex. I don't care about the sex. I just want somebody to hold me, which is why we tell dads, do not ever think that your son is too old for you to hold him. And when you give him a hug, let your son pull away first, because boys are going to need to be held by their dads, and grown men need to be hugged by their dads. That's huge. It's just a part of the way God made us. However, in these relationships, you can imagine the volatility and the ups and downs, because no human being can provide a totally safe, secure, warm connection all the time. So what happens in these relationships is, as those threats emerge, a woman will actually begin to panic. I'm losing you. I'm losing this connection. So they'll hold on even tighter. And what happens is, the other woman begins to feel suffocated, and she has to back away. And then that causes the other one to panic more, to the point where one of the women finally leaves the relationship. The remaining woman is in a state of absolute isolation and loneliness, in a place of panic. It is going to be incredibly hard to end a lesbian relationship. It will feel like death. There is something emotional that probably reaches close to death. It will take time. There will be falls. It will be a long process. And they need compassion and support and understanding. That's the privilege that I have in moderating the forums, and sometimes when I get to be in the live groups, women's group at Living Hope, is to give the compassion that is deserved. One of the things that we communicate to women who are going through the grief process of cutting off a lesbian relationship because they know that's the right thing to do. And so many of them said, I really miss Jesus. I could not have intimacy with God and have intimacy with this other woman at the same time. Is to acknowledge, you know, what you've got is an illegitimate grief. You can't go out there and go into your Sunday school class and say, I'm kind of wavering between feeling like I'm going through a divorce and a death back and forth, you know, and I really need to pray for you because I've cut off my relationship with my girlfriend. Well, they're not going to bring this up in a Sunday school class and ask for prayer. This, who do you tell that you're dying inside? Which is why we're glad to be there, because we're all anonymous, confidential, a support system. And just to be able to tell them, your pain is real and the Lord is with you. Invite him into it. Let him hold you when you're going through the horrible time of disconnecting. Because this is what it's feeling like. It feels like death. So let me give you Lori Rensel's characteristics of emotional dependency. There can be a preoccupation with the other's appearance, personality, problems, and interests. What this comes down to is, oh my gosh, it's so exciting to be to have somebody obsessed with me, and I'm obsessed with the other person. This is a counterfeit of the fact that God is obsessed with us. He knows everything about us. He knows what we're thinking. He knows how many hairs are on our heads. He knows what we've done in the past. He knows what we're doing today. He knows what we're going to do tomorrow. This is a counterfeit of the intimacy that we can receive from God and understand. He never takes his eyes off of us, and he never stops thinking about us. He's always there with us. This is the counterfeit of that. People in emotionally dependent relationships are usually unwilling to make short-range or long-range plans that don't include the other. And that's because there's the sense that, you know, we're just kind of one person in two bodies. And, you know, I'm you and you're me, and there is no real boundary between us. And so how could I make plans that don't include you? And I Everything is an us. There is no individual I. If somebody asks you about the relationship, they tend to be very defensive. What do you mean? You know, what are you seeing? There's nothing wrong. I have a right to have a friend. Everybody has a right to have a best friend. There's a strong defensive walls that will immediately go up. There can be inappropriate physical affection. Ricky pointed out that the what is acceptable for girls to do, I mean, we can walk down the street with another girl holding hands, we can rub somebody's back in church, you know, just that kind of friendship thing. With guys, not so much. You can't hold hands unless you're in Saudi Arabia with another man. And for a man to be physically affectionate and rubbing somebody else's body, nope, that's not going to work. And even with that, with two women, there can be inappropriate physical affection when it looks like a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife kind of thing. But it's like, but I love them so much and I just need to show it. But it's inappropriate because your feelings have overflowed the banks like the broken levee. Referring frequently to the other in conversation. You can't even talk about anything without bringing the other person into it. Their name is constantly on your lips. And often, because there is this sense of having erased the boundary between you and me, they'll feel free to speak for the other person because there's this sense of entitlement of identifying you're all caught up and who you are is completely connected to the other person. It's like two people who become Siamese twins and you're joined at the heart. And so, you know, we share everything because we're really one person in two bodies. Exhibiting an intimacy and familiarity with the others, with other person that makes other people feel uncomfortable or embarrassed. And you know what that's like when you've seen people in love who are just, they're making goo-goo eyes at each other. And there's an appropriate time for that. I will never forget the sweetness of watching at my son's weddings the amazing connection, that the eye-to-eye contact, and I felt like I ought to look away. It was almost embarrassing, but it was holy. So it wasn't bad embarrassing, it was just precious. Of this sense of, oh my gosh, we are man and wife, and this is amazing. That is beautiful, that's appropriate, that is holy. It's not so with emotionally dependent relationships, which is why when two guys are in a relationship or two girls in a relationship and they go home for Thanksgiving or whatever, often parents will have to say, I don't want you guys touching each other. Please just keep the walls up because it's really going to make us uncomfortable. Friends, you know, and the people that you run with will often be the first people to notice there's something wrong because the way that they're treating each other and the way they're looking at each other and just their body language will bespeak an intimacy that is inappropriate. Let me describe the differences between having healthy friendships and emotionally dependent relationships, where one is good and the other is bad. In healthy friendships, there's freedom and generosity in the way that they relate to each other. But emotionally dependent relationships are two people just so locked into each other that there's mutual stagnation because it's just you and me and nobody else. There isn't. It's like the Dead Sea in the Holy Land. There's no new fresh water coming in, so it gets stagnated. In a healthy friendship, they're ready to open the circle to others. If you've got two people who are good friends and then they meet somebody, let's say in a Sunday school class, which is what happened to me. It was two really, really close friends who'd been friends for years. They both moved from Houston to Dallas. They were in our Sunday school class and then they invited me to start going to lunch with them and started inviting our family to hang out with them. And they didn't have an emotionally dependent friendship. That was like, oh man, let's bring Sue in. And there was a, then the circle got bigger. And there was, because there wasn't anything weird going on between them. But in emotionally dependent friendships, it's ingrown. No, it's just you and me and nobody else. In a healthy friendship, one experiences joy when the other's friend hits it off with others because you want the best for the other. You want them to grow. You want them to have fullness of joy, fullness of relationships. But in ED friendships, they're threatened by outside relationships. As a matter of fact, as it's very interesting to me to see what happens with sometimes emotional dependency develops between women on the forum who are not allowed to have any contact off the public posts to each other. No phone calls, no emails, no IMing, nothing. And yet they'll start talking just one-on-one to each other and ignoring other people's questions, and we don't want to have, well, it's just you and me. We'll just have a thread. It's just you and me. It's kind of like we'll go into our own private little room, which as a moderator we go, oh, no, there's a problem here. We're going to have you back off from each other. There was one woman who was in an emotionally dependent relationship with a woman in her real life, and she was telling her about a friendship she was having with another woman on the forum, which was pretty healthy, actually. And the woman in her real life said, I think you need to stop talking to that girl online. I think you just need to stop talking to her altogether. Because she was feeling threatened. Oh my gosh, there's room for another girl in your life. That's just not right. It's making me feel insecure. In healthy friendships, you want to see the other grow and develop new interests and skills, because friends want friends to grow and be the best that they can be and soar, and what can I do to help you be a better you? In emotionally dependent friendships, it limits personal growth, because if you grow, you may grow away from me, and I can't stand that. That is very threatening to me, if you may grow away from me. In healthy friendships, one is affected by the things that others say and do, but the reaction is balanced because you're not depending on the other person for your stability. But in ED relationships, if one makes a casual remark, the other one can throw them into the pits of despair or to the highest mountain of ecstasy from just some little comment. And it's not well balanced. It's out of balance. I was listening to a call-in counseling program once, and this woman called, who obviously had an emotionally dependent friendship with another woman in her church, and she said, "I am really, really upset with my friend because her birthday. I knew her birthday was coming, and I spent 3 weeks going into every card shop, reading every card to find just the perfect card for her. And I literally spent weeks getting just the right thing." And she just read it and went, "Oh, thanks," and then set it aside. And she was like, she didn't even understand how important that card was. And I'm thinking, lady, get a grip. Bless your heart. You are putting way too much energy and time into this. And because the woman's reaction to not just the card, but the investment of time that went into it was way less than what she wanted, she was thrown into a state of depression over it. That is not healthy. In a healthy friendship, if a close friend moves away, you feel sorrow and loss. It's hard when your friend moves away. And you can, if you're a girl, you may even cry about it, and I certainly have. But in an emotionally dependent relationship, if one of the partners moves away, the other is gripped with panic, anguish, and desperation. Have you ever been within hearing distance of the nursery hall at a church where moms are leaving off their children who are having separation anxiety? You know, little kids who are old enough to realize my mom is going to leave me here in this room and she is going to disappear, probably forever. You know, they're not going to go, "Well, Mom, have a good time in church. God bless you. Enjoy being ministered to by the sermon." They're like, "Come back here. You can't leave me. Don't leave me. Don't leave me." You know, and I'm going to die. The feeling is I'm going to die. And they are thrown into a place of panic. Separation anxiety is putting it very mildly. And this is what happens with emotionally dependent relationships too, which is why when the person wouldn't text back and the other one texted for 47 times, he was gripped with panic that, you know, I'm not being answered. I'm anguished. I'm panicking. Healthy friendships are joyful and healing and upbuilding. They are one of the ways in which God does therapy on our souls, because, you know, we all have holes in our souls. We live in a fallen world, and we've all sustained all kinds of wounds. And when God gives us friendships, friends have a way, their love and their attention, their affection, their approval, the three A's, they have a way of filling those holes in our hearts. That's God's plan for us. That's why it's absolutely essential to be connected to the body of Christ and to have good, healthy, strong relationships with other believers. That's just part of healthy friendships. But in unhealthy friendships, it's bondage. I was at a Love One Out conference that Focus on the Family does. Wonderful conference. And there was a speaker there once who said, you know, in the lesbian world, we don't have partners. We have prisoners. She said it really was a bondage because you're all bound up with chains from the other person. And you're not allowed to do anything on your own. You're not allowed to have a thought on your own. You know, basically, you belong to me. I own you. Nobody would ever come right out and say it, but that's the unspoken message that comes. The glue that holds people together in emotional dependent relationships is manipulation. Let me give you some examples of how this what this looks like. Finances are a very strong sense of manipulation because often we see this with women who move into, they become roommates, buy a house together or whatever, and they'll get a joint checking account. They'll buy a house together, and it's like, okay, if our money is commingled, then you can't leave me because, you know, we're all connected. We've got this emotional Siamese twin thing going on. Lots and lots of gifts. I keep seeing this all the time. It's amazing how many e-cards I receive from the women in the forum. And they would want to do the same thing to other women in the forum, except nobody can have each other's email addresses. I have actually received packages. I don't do this anymore. But I have received packages from women on the forum who said, I really, really want to send a birthday card to so-and-so. Would you? Can I send it to you and you can send it on to her? And that way I won't know her address, you know. And things like that have a way of falling apart because it's feeding unhealthy relationships. You know, when you have broken levees, like what you see on the screen, you need to have walls in place, and you can't do this, all the things you ordinarily like to. So giving gifts are a great way to glue you to another person. Gifts and cards regularly for no special occasion. Lots of flowers and jewelry and baked goods and gifts that are symbolic of the relationship. One of the things that we've seen in people with ED is they have an amazing number of our songs, and they have CDs. They have identical CDs, and there's so many musical songs that nobody can listen to on the radio without punching to another station because that makes me feel, remember her, you know, because it's just part of the thing that glues people together. One of the things that we do, we have done in the past at the Living Hope Live group, when people are having trouble getting out of emotionally dependent relationships, is we tell them, bring all the stuff, all the gifts, all the clothes, all the pieces of art, all the CDs, the things that physically tie you to the person that you're in an ED relationship with, bring it here and we will help you destroy it. And it's like, I don't know that I can do that. Well, how badly do you want to be free? Because those things are glue. It binds you to a person. One lady even said, I came to realize that when I was in ED relationships, you've ever seen kudzu? It's the ivy that grows like crazy and it covers everything. She said, everything was connected to everything else through, you know, with references to my friend. And I had to basically empty my house of half the stuff in it. One lady said, I don't have the ability to do this on my own. She brought a box of CDs. This is before, I mean, she had brought a box of tapes because CDs hadn't been invented yet. And she said, it's all music that we shared together, and I can't do this. You're going to have to do it. And the other women in the group took the tapes and started pulling them out and just decimating them because she didn't have the strength to do it, which... this is one of the ways that we allow the body of Christ to be there for us. It's like, girls, you're going to have to help me with this because I don't have what it takes. But if they're ruined, and I'll never get a chance to listen to them again. One type of manipulation is clothes, adopting the same style, wearing each other's clothes. Some women only have one closet, and they only have one set of clothes. And one of the things that I've noticed, I tend to do more and more traveling now that we're empty nesters and we get to do a lot of ministry out there. So I spend a good amount of time in airports, and I'm just amazed at what I see in terms of the clothes of lesbian couples. If they had different tastes before, one of them had to go away because now they have the exact same taste because they're emotionally Siamese twins. Romanticism, where you use poetry or music or other romanticisms to provoke an emotional response. Because I want to make sure that I can control you. I want to push your button and know that B17 is going to play in your heart. And you're going to react with feelings of warmth and specialness, and you love me. I can make you love me. Another type of manipulation is helplessness, where one of them creates or exaggerates problems to gain sympathy and attention. So often, this is the case in relationships where one has learned helplessness, where they, I can't do anything. I can't balance a checkbook. I can't go out and get a job. You're going to have to take care of me. And it keeps them in dependent relationships because one needs to be cared for and the other one needs to do the caretaking. And they don't know how to break the cycle. I know of two women that have been in a relationship with each other for 18 years. They fight all the time. One is a really sad alcoholic. They're really, really unhappy with each other, but they don't have any idea how to do life without the other. So they're still together. It's the perfect example of being prisoners instead of partners. Guilt is a huge part of emotionally dependent relationships, making the other person feel guilty over unmet expectations. I thought you were going to call me today, but I guess I'm not that important to you. Those kinds of comments. Now, guilt is not, the manipulation of guilt is not limited to emotionally dependent relationships. Mothers are really, really good at this. It just kind of comes with giving birth. So know that guilt is not limited to ED relationships, but it's very, very effective at getting the other person to do what you want them to do and violate your own sense of propriety or what you want to do or what you think is right in order to avoid feeling bad and guilty. Lots and lots of threats, threatening to withdraw, threatening to leave the relationship, tremendous number of threats of suicide. We're seeing more and more of this in high school and college age kids, and it's often guys and girls, you know, who get in ED relationships, and they'll stay in those relationships because one says, if you leave me, I will kill myself and it will be your fault. And you will have to live the rest of your days knowing you made me do this. Now, the true reality is nobody can make us do anything. We are in charge of what we choose to do. We are in charge of our choices, and we are in charge of our behaviors. And so when someone says, you made me do this, that's a lie, because the reality is nobody can make us. They can make us feel guilty, they can make us feel certain ways, and then we need to evaluate that. How does this fit with reality? But threats are very, very powerful. Stonewalling, where one person pouts and broods and gives cold silences, and one will say, you haven't spoken to me in hours. What's wrong? Nothing. Nothing. And part of that is, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you, because you ought to know. People are terrible mind readers. They can be great friends, but they're terrible mind readers. But stonewalling can often be a big part of manipulation that tries to get the other person to respond. And provoking insecurity, where you're withholding approval. You're picking on the partner's weak spots. If I can make you feel insecure, then I am in a one-up position, and you won't leave me. I see this a lot in real unhealthy marriages that are emotionally abusive, where one will say to the others, it's usually the husband to the wife, although it does happen the other way, where you know you're a nothing. You know you can't make it out there in the world. You ought to be so grateful that I married you. Or it, in these kinds of relationships, you ought to be so grateful that anybody will be with you because nobody else will have you. You know, at your core, you are a disgusting, worthless piece of garbage. And you should be so glad that I am willing to put up with you. That is provoking insecurity, and people start, you hear that over. If you hear a lie often enough, you will believe it. And then that's why, as Ricky mentioned before, what we do at Living Hope is that we help people recognize the lies, replace them with the truth, which is what spiritual growth and maturity means, and finding our identity in Christ. When you've got the God of the universe who says, I am crazy in love with you, and when I made you, I had such a good day. I did so good when I made you. You are precious in my sight, and I love you. I made you in my image. I don't make junk. And not only that, Jesus says, I was willing to die for you. The Father says, I was willing to live with the separation from my beloved eternal Son for you. That's how valuable you are. And that is so different from, you are a piece of junk. So we help people identify those as lies. Let go of the lies and absorb what the truth is. You don't have to be insecure when the God of the universe is inside of you, loving you, supporting you, and he's got great plans for you. Good news about emotional dependency. I added this slide after a lady came to the first time I did this session, and she came live, but she had listened to the CD, and she said, you have no idea how this talk on emotional dependency changed my life, because I realized that all the stuff that I was doing wrong with people, I can do right with God. I know how to have an emotionally dependent relationship with God, and it changed everything. See, emotional dependency is healthy in a relationship with God because he made us to be giant sucking funnels on him. He wants us to be, I love that song, Breathe. You know, you are the air I breathe. God wants us to be that dependent on him. There was a grandpa who wanted to help his grandson appreciate what it meant to really be in intimacy and close relationship with God. And they were at the lake. And Grandpa pushed, he was about 10 years old, pushed the boy under the water and kept him there for about 10 seconds. And he was struggling and struggling to come up, and then he let him up. And, you know, he's drawing great drafts of air into his lungs. He said, what did you do that for? And he said, when you were under the water, what did you want more than anything you want? I wanted air. I wanted to breathe. And he said, when you want God the way you wanted air to breathe, that's the point at which God wants you to get, and that's the point at which you will be emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, and have that intimacy with God. That's the goal that you want, is to be able to go, I need you like I need air to breathe. Those who are emotionally dependent relationships desperately need the other person. They know how that is. They know what it means to call somebody 16 times a day and text message them 47 times a day. And it's totally okay to call and text God 47 million times a day, because he's like, I've been waiting for your call. I've been waiting for you to talk to me. I've been here all along just waiting for you to turn to me. And sometimes he says, you know what, you don't even have to talk to me. I'll just come sit with you. I just want to be with you. That is an emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy relationship with God. You can take all the parts that go into emotional dependency, which is a counterfeit and a broken aspect of a healthy relationship with God, and reformat it, repurpose it, let God redeem it, and make us into powerful, wonderful disciples of Jesus Christ. Desperate neediness is healthy in our relationship with God. And that's something that if you don't actually have it to begin with, which it makes sense because the heart is an idol factory, we can say, God, help me to be as desperately needy, to feel as desperately needy of you as I actually am. Have you ever watched any of the astronauts go on spacewalks? When they have left the capsule and they're in their spacesuit, they are tethered to the space shuttle or whatever, and they've got the air contained within them. they are completely 100% dependent on NASA to sustain them and to keep them, giving them their next breath. And it would be very foolish to say, I'm doing just fine out here. What do I need NASA for? What do I need this spacesuit for? What do I need this stupid can of air? It, you know, can't say it weighs a lot. You're weightless in space. But, you know, just to say, this is stupid. I can do fine on my own. The reality is we need God to take our next breath. We need God to sustain our hearts so that they'll keep pumping. We need God for every aspect of our lives. And desperate neediness is our actual place of reality with God. What a blessed thing when God allows us to see that's the way it really is, and then to feel it. People with a history of emotional dependency already know one part of relating in a healthy way to God. And so if you realize that the way, if we relate to God the way we relate to people, we need to switch them so often. Because if you have a relationship with God where you go, you know, I like it that you're in my life. I could live without you, but I'm glad you're there. That is very unhealthy with God, but it's very healthy with people to say, I love having you in my life. I love having a relationship with you. But if you were to die or move away, it would not kill me. It would not destroy me. I would really miss you, but I would be okay. That's healthy with people. And conversely, if we say to people, I'm so desperate for you, that's unhealthy, but it's healthy with God. You know, so what we need to do is switch the way we relate to people and the way we relate to God, and then we'll be okay. So I wanted to leave you on a good note that people who are emotionally dependent on others, they're halfway there to being in a very healthy relationship with God. But most people can't make that jump on their own, and we need supernatural assistance, and God is just waiting for us to ask Him, help me make that transition so I'm as desperately needy of You. I want to be a giant sucking funnel of You, God. That's what I want. And He loves to say, I will help you get there. So, do you have any comments or questions? Any reactions?
Can I ask, I'm married, so I'm wondering, dependency between, in the time you're talking about here, versus how much of this is appropriate, inappropriate in a marriage? Maybe,
well, that's a great question. It crosses over the line. It becomes unhealthy emotional dependency when you desperately need the other person to make you okay, meaning that if they withdraw, if they start threatening or whatever, that you can't go to God and let Him hold you up and keep you secure and without falling. And if you just leave God out of the picture and go, I can't be happy if my husband or wife is not unhappy with, unless they're happy with me. We've got to be able to be interdependent without being totally reliant on each other. So of course we're going to be affected. I mean, especially in a marriage, there's got this one flesh union, and you know, we're joined, we really are joined at the heart. But for the other person to, like for example, I am the thermostat in my home. I'm a woman. I set the thermostat. I'm the one who determines if it is a warm, affectionate place to be or cold and frigid and don't even think of talking to me, that kind of thing. I set the thermostat. But my husband does not have to, he can be totally happy and functioning just fine regardless of what the atmosphere is. I work it hard to keep it jacked up to warm and fuzzy, but but if he is stressed and is, you know, he's getting packing and getting ready for a trip or whatever, I don't have to look at that and go, you are not paying attention to me. What's wrong? I can't be happy if you're not paying attention to me. I don't. I just go, anything I can do to help, you know? And what's going on with you is not affecting me. It's not destabilizing me. So. Yeah, married couples cannot afford to identify or find their identity in the usness. You know, we still need to know who we are, where I end and you begin. So, yeah, when there is one person in two bodies, and that's just not healthy. So, yeah, it's not exactly the same thing, because God wants us to have, you know, healthy interdependency that way. And we really are joined at the heart, but appropriately, yeah. Yeah.
Don't you think that it has to be a body language very often because as you change the world, you know, it's just kind of a thing of before the Lord and saying, you know, am I okay? Are we doing okay?
Yeah.
You know, is there something I need to change or, you know, whatever? Am I really putting all my trust in you or am I putting all my trust?
That's a great point. Good point. This morning, when I was driving in, I was listening to a CD of a conference that happened at Dallas Seminary a few months ago, and I heard a very interesting story that I thought really related to this emotional dependency thing. A lady was talking about the fact that she had a very young baby. She was in a hurry to lose her baby weight for some event that she was going to, and her friend at the time was selling some product called Slender Now, which was a powder that you put in water or juice or something. And it tasted nasty, but it was supposed to help you lose weight super fast. She was nursing a baby, and she didn't bother to look at the label that said, do not use this product if you are nursing, because it totally wrecked the taste of mother's milk. It didn't poison it, but it turned it very acidic or something. And she didn't know that. She goes to nurse her baby, and, you know, his hungry, hungry little kid, he latches on, he starts to nurse and pulls away and he's crying and he's screaming and he's hungry, but he can't nurse. He's like, what is up with this? And she reads the thing on the package and goes, oh, I have made it impossible for my child. I am his only source of nurturing. I am his only source of sustenance. I am it for him and he can't come to me. And now he won't come to me because my breast milk tastes so bad. And it was breaking her heart. And she said, in the midst of dealing with it, look what I have done. I have created this situation. It's hurting me. It's hurting him. And the Lord spoke to her and said, now you know how I feel when you won't come to me and nurse on my word and nurse on my presence. I am your only source of sustenance and nutrition. I am the only one who can give you what your soul needs. Can you? And now you know, as a mother, and that your child won't come to you how I feel when you won't come to me. And I was thinking about the fact that Peter tells us to long for the pure milk of the Word. And somehow, for the 34 years that I've been a Christian, every time I've read that verse, for some reason, although I nursed both my children, I'm thinking milk in a baby bottle, you know, and never made the connection that newborn babies, particularly in Bible times, are always nursed. They didn't have formula. They didn't have baby bottles. If you're longing for the pure milk of the Word, you're not just longing for the white milky stuff. You're longing to be nursed. And I was thinking about the fact that this is so often what I deal with our ladies in our forum, is they want to be emotionally nursed by a woman taking the place of the mother that they didn't have, or those close feelings with the mom that they didn't get. And God says, you're not ever going to be able to go to a woman to get that kind of sustenance. Come to me. Come be nursed by me and let me give you the milk of the Word, and let me nurse you and hold you to myself. And I'll look in your eyes and you look in my eyes and let me tell you I love you, and let me just hold you. Basically, God is saying, let me nurse you. And that's what emotional dependency is about, is I need you to nurse me. And there's this baby-like aspect of the heart going, just hold me and love me and nurse me and make me feel all full up and satisfied and taken care of. And God says, you can't get that from another human being at the level at which you feel like you need it, but I can give it to you. Because you're going to feel like you have this grand canyon of emotional need in your heart, and no human being will be able to meet that. But I am the infinite God, and I am more than sufficient for a grand canyon of emotional need in your heart. And I just thought, what an incredible God we have, who looks at emotional dependency and says, that is just such a poor substitute for what your heart is longing for, and I stand ready to give it to you. So this is the kind of thing, one of the reasons I love giving this talk is because it's a reminder to me of how to go to my Heavenly Daddy, who has all the aspects of femininity and mothering and nurturing in him. That's where we as women get that from. You know, and he says, come to me, come to me, come to me.